Hey there, this is relationship coach Roy Biancolana, a recent guest on the very podcast that you are about to listen to. Well, get ready and buckle your seats because Aubrey is about to take you on the road to rediscovery with another great episode. Sit back and enjoy.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as you know, you can listen to this show anywhere you get your podcasts. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, we encourage you to leave a rate and review. Otherwise, shoot us an email with your feedback and thoughts at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com, and we'll give you a shout out in a future episode. My special guest is the founder of Cinesomatics, a healing technology that leads in the field of video movement diagnostics. He's the director of the Center of Cinesomatic Development and an award-winning author and best-selling author. His book, Awake to Your True Self, Why You're Still Stuck and How to Break Through, is a book that offers 18 unconventional approaches that reveal why you're stuck and how to break through. We'll chat about the book, including how moving yourself and moving your body in a new way can change things like your finances, relationships, and a lot more. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Andrew Daniel to the show. Andrew, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Hi, Aubrey. Thank you for having me.
Wow, thank you. Thank you so much, sir. So if we can just dive in first, Andrew, if you can share with the listeners, just unpack the whole concept and idea and philosophy behind Cinesomatics.
So I think a good place to start with that is just in the name. Mm-hmm. So Cinesomatics. Cinesomatics, Cinesomatics. So this name comes from two parts. One is Cine, and the other is Somatics. Cine is in reference to video and to movement. It has its base in Greek of like kinesiology, movement. Mm-hmm. And so movement and video, and then somatics of the body. And so it's really spelled out right there in the name. Cinesomatics is a methodology, a philosophy, an approach to not only healing and transformation, but also high functionality. Mm. And it simply works by using video, movement, feeling, and feedback as its four pillars to help show participants the hidden stories, mythologies, archetypes, blocks, and even the shadow material that is within ourselves. Mm-hmm. And all of those things keep us stuck. All of those things not only are found in our thoughts and our emotions, but they're also found within the body. So Cinesomatics, what we do is we film participants moving. So using the high-end cinematography equipment, we will have participants do any number of diagnostic movements that we have. Sometimes it's shaking the hands, the legs, the body, dancing, showing different archetypes. And we have participants do that in their body through movement. And we film this, and then after the participants do their movements, we play the video back, and I give feedback on what I see. And what I'm looking for is the subconscious data. It's not body language. It's not the surface level posturing. What is the subconscious data that's being communicated through the body? And then I reflect that back to them, and then they get to see it for themselves on video. And so that's the gist of the process. And doing that reveals pretty much everything. It's based on a foundational principle of how you do one thing is how you do everything. And so the way that somebody moves and shows up in their body reflects in some way how they move through their life.
Amazing. That's fascinating, Andrew. I mean, the subconscious data, in a lot of cases, I would take that as data that you're gathering from the movements that, say, the participant, to some extent, may not have any idea they're doing as part of their movement.
Exactly. Yep.
I see.
And yeah. And so the video, there's a great quote by Carl Jung: until you make the unconscious conscious, it will run your life and you'll call it fate. Mm-hmm. And this process, this modality is really the most cutting edge way to do that. And so we take this unconscious, this subconscious stuff that's in the person, mm-hmm. and is exposed through the movement and shows that, makes that conscious, takes mm-hmm. that unconscious stuff that's in their psyche, that's in their shadow, that they've suppressed or avoided or have no idea has even been there for decades. And by reflecting it through myself as a facilitator and through the video where they get to see themselves, that unconscious becomes conscious. And then we get to help them make a new choice to shift that, to change that, so that no longer is their destiny.
I see. So you must have really, really witnessed some incredibly revealing breakthroughs with your clients and participants, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's stuff that I would have never believed if I hadn't witnessed it myself and had the evidence on video. Yeah, really gotcha. Remarkable stuff.
Wow, that makes sense. That makes sense. Quick question: What about the moods or the emotional mindset of a participant? You know, our moods change, our emotional mindsets change, depending on circumstances, what's going on in our lives. Andrew, is there anything you gather that's different, or does the subconscious data tell you the same, regardless of the emotional state or mood?
Well, their emotional state gets revealed. So I know everything that the participant is feeling, because this process, it's not a rational process. So I'm not over here with a checklist saying, all right, well, you're doing this, so that means this, and this, so and so and so. What I'm doing is I'm actually feeling them. I'm actually connecting to them. I'm feeling them. I'm feeling what they're feeling in their body. And so I know if they're feeling sadness, anger, frustration, if they're getting defensive, if they're manipulating, if they're being codependent, everything. This process reveals everything. It reveals someone's worldview. It reveals their past trauma. It reveals what they're feeling and thinking now in the moment. It reveals how they process the world. It reveals how much money they're making. It reveals how they relate to men and women, their relationship to God or whatever their spiritual or religion is. It shows everything, because the way that you move in your body is the way that you move through the world. How a participant shows up on the call is how they're showing up to their life. So whatever's happening for them is not just happening on the call, it's happening somewhere else in their life.
That makes sense. No, that makes absolute sense. The way they move in this activity and this exercise is how they move throughout life. Wanted to ask you, like, early in your career, you've achieved some pretty substantial accomplishments. So I'd like to know, like, can you paint a picture as to where you were early in the early part of your life and or career when you reached this realization of how we move and how it can affect the many facets of our lives that we thought were actually not associated?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't very early on in my career at all.
Okay. Okay.
I actually struggled a lot early in my career. I was in a completely different career. I had a software company. I wrote a particle effects and physics engine to create special effects. So I was very much in my head. I was very much not anything to do with movements in the body or elsewhere. And so I had a coaching practice. I had written other things around sexuality, teaching relationships and sexuality. And all of that came from my own struggles in my life. And when I was young, I was bullied and teased. I had warts on my hands and I had a lot of social struggles. And so I spent a lot of, pretty much all of my adult life figuring out how to fix that, how to heal from that, how to not hate myself, how to have success with women, how to have friends, how to have success in business, pretty much how to have success in any area of my life because it was not working. And so I've spent about 15 years doing every traditional and alternative healing modality you can imagine, or at least something like it. And a lot of it got me great results. A lot of it helped. But what I found was that my life still wasn't working. I was published. I had the publishing deal of a lifetime in my niche. And 3 months later, I was homeless. And this was, I was in my mid to late 20s. It's like, how could I have such great success? I had a software company. I had Fortune 100 clients. I was smart. I was into health. I was learning all of these secrets to the universe. I was doing all the self-help improvement, reading all these books, going to the seminars, doing the therapy. Why was it that I was still stuck? Why was it that my life was getting worse and worse, even though I was learning all this stuff? And that eventually led me to the movement stuff, to the embodiment piece. Whereas, this stuff is literally in the body. I saw myself on video and I looked at myself and I was like, oh my God, yeah, that does not look like somebody that's making millions of dollars. That does not look like somebody who's at peace. That does not look like my image of myself. And that was a wake-up call. And then getting into the movement work and doing all of this stuff, I realized, this is everything. The missing piece for me wasn't more knowledge in my head. It was that knowledge turned into embodied wisdom. That my body, literally the way that I moved through the space, through the world, was the thing that was going to get me the results in the world. Because my mind is not in the physical manifested world. My mind's up, well, wherever the hell the mind is, we still don't even know. But it's not the body. It's not the material stuff around us. But the body is. And so I realized that was the missing link. I need to actually feel, embody, and look, and move, and show up in the world as this wisdom, rather than just thinking about it and talking about it.
I see. So does that, without selling the farm on the work that you do in your workshops, but does, excuse me, does that involve for the participant a shift in thinking, a mind shift, a change in the way they think? Or it sounds like there's a tremendous amount of self-awareness and introspection that is needed for this to work. And I imagine there's activities and exercises as part of your workshop in which you help the participants at least reach to that point so that you can be productive in these movements and acknowledgement.
Yeah, so you said something really important, the self-awareness. If you're not willing to look at this stuff, if you're not willing to look inside and face and be aware of your stories, your beliefs, the results you've gotten in your life, how you actually feel, it's not going to work. I mean, that's the whole purpose. And so I work with a lot of clients to get them even to that point, to where they're able to feel, where they're able to actually look at themselves, both internally and on the video. And so it's a very confronting process. You know, this is not beginner work. This is some of, if not one of the most advanced work that exists. And it's not because it's complicated that it's advanced. It's advanced because it's confronting. It's advanced because you don't get to weasel out of it. No. You don't get to escape.
Right.
If you have an agenda, if you're manipulating, if you're hiding, if you're running away, I will reflect that. I will give you feedback and say
it will be revealed.
Yeah. So it's so all of that stuff is revealed, even if the person has no idea they're doing it. So most people don't realize maybe that they're doing something that's narcissistic, or they have an agenda, or they're manipulating. Sometimes they think they're just being nice. They think they're just helping somebody. But maybe in reality, they're rescuing somebody. They're being codependent. They have a ulterior motive, even if that ulterior motive is to stay safe, is to not get rejected. So all of this stuff gets revealed. And there's no checklist. It's all stuff for that individual person in real time, bespoke exactly for them. So it's not a cookie cutter process. This is something that I feel and I work with the person right in front of me. And whatever they're presenting is what we address and deal with. And so that self-awareness, if someone is not willing to take a look at themselves, then it's just not going to work. So what you said is absolutely spot on.
Okay. And thank you for that clarification, Andrew. Really appreciate it, because in my mind, I imagine different people are at different places when it comes to introspection, when it comes to self-awareness. Some people are deep thinkers, you know, and other people are just like, hey, if I see a red car, it's a red car. And, you know, that's what it is. I don't care how it works or the parts that are in it. If it runs, I start it, it runs, you know. And so, you know, they don't think deeper than what they see. And so, to your point, there's no cookie cutter method, because everyone is different. And it seems like you apply different methods and tools to help the individual, depending on where they are in that introspection, where they are in that self-awareness. And that's tremendous. And it's like you're setting the foundation, right, for that. Is there any degree, because to me, this seems like, it seems like there's a very factual element here in this activity. And people are really emotional. And some people may, I don't know, take it personal that they have to take that hard look in the mirror. And one thing that rang in my mind as you were explaining this, Andrew, was accountability. And that confronting themselves, that hard look in the mirror, that self-awareness and introspection of where they've been, the choices they've made, and that sort of thing, there's a level of accountability that I think needs to be recognized. And a lot of people have an emotional kind of response to that, you know? I don't know. My thought is that can maybe tend to distract from the productivity and the momentum of the work that you're doing with them. So is this something that you see that's common in your workshops, or is everyone just willing to, you know, to accept what they've done so that they can continue moving forward with your work?
Yeah, it's actually a part of the work. So people come in and they get defensive. They mm-hmm. take it personal. Mm-hmm. They're doing all of this stuff. That's part of the process. And I see that they're doing that. And then I mm-hmm. give them feedback. I say, you're taking this personal. Mm-hmm. You're getting defensive. You're making a meaning out of this that isn't there.
Right.
And that itself, it's like, if that's what's happening, then we stop everything else and we just address that.
Right,
you know,
right.
Nothing is going to move forward if you're defending against this. And people defend against the truth to protect their stories.
Yes.
To stay in suffering.
Yes.
And so it's part of it. That happens. We all do this. And so the initial part of this work for some people is really just helping them getting out of that defensive mode. They've been attacked their life. They've been invalidated throughout their life. They don't feel safe. They don't trust themselves or others. And all of that gets revealed. So, you know, this isn't just a come in and fix something. This is a transform your right. entire life. This is a show up in the world in a completely new way. Because in order to move forward, if you're defending, if you're getting angry, if you're fighting back at me, when you see yourself doing it on the video, you're going to stay stuck. And so people that do that, that can't break through, they stop working with me. They just self-select themselves out.
Right.
And they're just unwilling to take accountability mm-hmm. or responsibility for themselves. Mm. Now, there's another set of people that are doing all of that. And they're aware they're doing it, and they want to stop doing that. They say, yeah, I get so defensive. I'm taking this all personally. But you're right. This isn't real. So, yeah, help me stop taking everything personally and be defensive. And those people that do that, their entire lives change. And then the third set of people is the people that aren't getting defensive, that aren't taking it personally, that have maybe already done that work.
Right.
And then they can just come in and move faster. But, yeah, I can meet anybody where they're at.
Yeah.
But they have to have a certain willingness.
Yes.
They have to have courage. They have to be willing to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. They have to be willing to make new choices.
Mm-hmm.
To, as you said, take accountability. And without that self-awareness and responsibility and accountability, nothing in their life is going to change, whether it's with me or anybody else.
So true. So true. And it also sounds, Andrew, as if you create a safe space, not a safe space from hiding from your truth, but a safe space in the aspect of judgment.
Yeah, the real definition of it. Yeah, this is not a college campus safe space. This is a real safe space.
Yeah.
But the safety actually comes from the trust that I'm going to tell them the truth.
Yes.
It's actually not safe to be with someone who's coddling you and enabling you and allowing you to manipulate and get away with your stuff.
Yeah.
People genuinely, truly at the highest levels do not feel safe. I've been in my relationships, and with the woman I've been with, I tell the truth. I don't coddle them. I say it how it is. I'm not just going to say something to make them happy while I abandon myself. No, I say a lot of things that make them feel wonderful, but they're true and they're authentic.
Mm-hmm.
And what they always tell me is, I feel so safe with you. I can trust what you're saying is true because you're not manipulating me. You're not saying it to get in my pants. You're not saying it to just appease me.
Right.
So the level of trust is actually exponentially more in this kind of space and container where I'm going to be telling them the truth and they can trust what I'm saying is true. I'm not projecting my stuff. I'm not making them wrong. I'm not judging them. I'm not giving them should or shouldn'ts. I'm not giving them advice. I'm not taking their power away. I'm not rescuing them. I'm simply reflecting this back to them so they can say the, so they can see the truth for themselves. And it is safe. And in that safety of not being judged, of being allowed to do anything, I tell my clients, "What you can do whatever it takes, right? The willingness to do whatever it takes. And as a facilitator, I also have to be willing to show up without any judgments, without making them wrong for anything. Because we expose and explore the deepest, darkest stuff of humanity. I mean, the most, you know, deepest feelings of evilness and darkness and perversions and shadow. And so it's an incredibly healing space because I don't judge that. Because I've been through the process myself. I've done this in myself. I've gone through all my judgments. No, I'm not perfect. But I'm clear enough to be able to hold that space and container for them,
yes,
in a way that, you know, they've for most people never experienced before. You know, they grow up with parents that judge them and all of this stuff. So that space in itself that has no judgment, that they're not made wrong, they're not being manipulated, there's not an agenda, where none of that's happening, that in itself, without any movement or any fancy technique, can be incredibly healing.
Amazing. And if you don't mind, might I also add, you're not breaking their spirit, it doesn't sound like.
Well.
Yeah. I mean, okay.
It is incredibly loving.
Okay.
But when, you know, I don't beat around the bush.
Right.
So I also have to not be codependent with them.
Right.
I cannot take their responses to my feedback personally.
Right.
I have to be willing, and this is one of the most important things in any high-level facilitator. I have to be willing to offend and lose my clients, to lose the money, to lose everything in order to stand up and share with them the truth. That is how we move people forward. The courage and the willingness to say the truth despite the potential negative consequences.
Because
the
other
consequence is they stay stuck and I hold them back and I can't do that. So I have to be willing to say things that they don't like if it means them to break through and to heal. So I've had clients that will cry and feel a lot of pain and all of this stuff. But it's not because of me. That's pain that they already have inside of them. All I'm doing is saying, look, this is the truth of what's going on.
Right.
Look at the suffering that you're in.
Yeah.
And so them actually feeling that pain, looking at the sorrow, the sadness, all of that feeling from traumas or whatever it is, that's actually the thing that's going to heal them, move them forward. And you can't do that if you're suppressing it or hiding from it.
No, you can't at all. 100% love it. Makes all kinds of sense. One other thing you mentioned earlier, Andrew, that I really, really enjoyed is your breakdown in unpacking what I was wondering if it was tangible or intangible, that connection, right, between the physical realm and whatever realm our thoughts and behaviors, you know, exist, you know, and you said, hey, it's in the body. The body's physical. So, you know, that's where you see it. And I was trying to figure out where the connection was, you know, between the movements and the body's just going to do, you know, whatever you're thinking, feeling, behaving, whether you know all those thoughts or behaviors or not is what I'm taking from you. And And so,
Aubrey, I'm gonna interrupt you here because I don't know if people are listening to this or not. But if you're only listening, you can't see this. What Aubrey did was when he said connection, he touched his two fingers, his two pointer fingers together. Mm. So this is an aspect of cinesomatics. So, so your body has a representation of what connection looks like. And as you're talking, you don't even realize it. You do something physical, tangible in the body, and that's how you, in one way, maybe it's not the only way, but it's one way you represent connection. And so for you, right, this connection, it's a touch. Two things come together. And that is a very primitive, basic example of cinesomatics. It's a certain archetype. The archetype of connection for you, one way to express it somatically through your body was to touch your two fingers together. So this is incredibly tangible, even though it accesses all of the intangible stuff. It's literally how you take all the intangible stuff and make it tangible. As above, so below.
Gotcha.
And so what you just demonstrated was a somatic archetype. This is how your body has a feeling of connection that went like this. You didn't spend 5 minutes in your head thinking about it. It was just this natural thing. I don't even know if you remember doing it. So your body has these internal representations, just like in your mind. Like if I say, think of connection, perhaps in your mind, for some people, it could be a circuit connecting. It could be a plug in a wall. Yeah. For other people, it could be talking. Other people, it could be hugging another person. Other people, it could be holding a flower in nature. So these are mental, psychological representations of the ideas of connection. Your body has its own representation. Your body has its own definition. Now, this is where the magic starts to happen. That itself is pretty cool because you start to see, oh my gosh, the body is representing things in a way that may be the same or different than our mind. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, this is, again, where the magic comes in. Now, if you said connection, and instead of touching your two fingers together, you took your hands and moved them away from each other, what might you think that means?
To me, it would be the opposite of what I'm saying.
Exactly. Yeah. So imagine you're somebody who instead of does something that to everyone else or to reality looks and feels like something connecting, you're doing something that's the opposite, that is spreading apart, that is disconnecting. Now, but imagine you're that person and you actually think and feel that's connecting. What do you think your results are going to be in your life around connection and connecting? If what you think is connection is actually disconnection.
I see that now. I mean, yeah. And so it applies in the other facets of your life based off that one interpretation. Wow.
Yeah.
That is where the magic happens, Andrew. Wow.
Yeah. And so now imagine you apply this to things like money and love and relationships. So I have clients come in and I say, all right, let's do some of these somatic archetypes. Now, we unconsciously do it. You know, a lot of people do it through just talking or you know, being Italian, whatever that is, right? Mm-hmm. However, in the cinesomatic work, we actually invite people to do this very purposefully. We have very specific things. So I have someone come in and I say, show me making money. Show me the archetype of making money. But don't tell me about it. Move.
Right.
Show me with your body.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I can tell if they have trouble paying rent, if they're poor, if they are making millions of dollars, just from that movement. Because a poor person, someone who struggles, comes in. I say, show me how to make money. They just stand there. They don't even know what it feels and looks like. If you don't know what it feels and looks like, it's really hard to have it in your life.
Right.
Right. If I said, what does a car look like? And you can't say anything. Chances are you don't have a car.
Right.
Right. Because if you had a car, you'd be able to tell me a bunch of stuff about it.
That's right.
If you knew how to make money, your body would know how to show that.
Yes.
And then there's different ranges. You know, so that's just a taste. You know, apply that to relationships. You know, what does it look like to be in love with somebody or to take care of somebody? And if you start punching your hand, that's a very dysfunctional way to show loving somebody. In fact, it's probably abusive. And so for that person, in these examples, it's what I would call reversed wired.
Okay.
It's the opposite. Their nervous system is actually reverse wired. What they think is love is actually abuse, and abuse love. What they thought was connection was actually disconnection. And so that's the start of everything. And from there, we actually, through the body and through discussion and the whole process, get them to actually re-embody the proper wiring, to rewire their nervous system, to create new neural pathways, and to figure out how all of that actually applies to their real life. So it's insanely practical. This stuff isn't just theoretical. You see it in the body, you change it in the body, and it actually reflects in your bank account, it reflects in your relationships, reflects in your health, reflects everywhere in your life. Because how you do one thing is how you do everything. If you can create the change somatically, it's going to create the change practically in your life.
Love it. Love it. Andrew, it seems like we've talked about two levels of connection that are most significant in your work. Just as a quick recap, if you don't mind, I'm thinking the first connection is obviously between our thoughts, our beliefs, and how that connects to the physical realm and the physical part of us, our bodies, right? So that's just in movement. There's subconscious stuff, there's conscious stuff. You know, and that's one level of connection that I see here. The next level of connection is when you are doing the movement and your diagnoses and your interpretations and working the participant through this in what you see and how, you know, and if there's an adjustment in how they should respond, then, you know, you work through that adjustment. But the connection there that I see is the connection in the work you do with their movements and how it connects to the other aspects of their lives, i.e.
practical
more life. Money in your pocket, relationships enhanced and things like that.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's all connected, right? Understanding that the mind, body, emotion, energetics, you know, all those levels affect each other. And so if you can change and feel and face the emotions, it's going to change the way that you show up in your body. Then that's going to change what actually happens in your life because there's no difference. And it sounds kind of, on one hand, it sounds so self-evident and obvious, but on the other hand, it sounds kind of crazy. Like, why would changing the way that I move my hands actually put in tens of thousands of more dollars into my bank account? But it does. it really does. And we have hundreds of people that have done it.
And they can attest to it. And I mean, like you said, this is all practical. It doesn't sound like anything theoretical with this, right?
So this is not theory-based. It's not evidence-based. It is not belief-based. You know, it's not about believing anything. This is results-based work. We only do what actually gets results in real life. So there's a lot of really fun and cool and interesting metaphysical or psychological or theoretical stuff that's like, oh, this is really interesting. But it doesn't necessarily apply to money in your bank or a relationship in your life or joy and happiness in your smile. Everything we do has to connect to something practical in life. And even if it doesn't seem like it on the surface, underneath it all, it is. Even if you don't see how being defensive to feedback about the way you're shaking your hands changes anything, it does. And
yeah.
Every single person that I've done this with and give feedback, and they've seen themselves move, say, you're moving in this way. They say, oh my God, that's how I do that over there and over there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's not somebody only relying on me. They get to see it themselves in their own body. So right. I'm not just some guru that's saying, this is what's wrong with you and this right. is what you should do.
Right.
I'm reflecting back, but the video reflects back even better. And so they can argue with what I'm saying, but it's right there. Right. It's
right in the video.
The video of them moving is right there, mm-hmm. which is one of the most powerful parts, but it's also the most challenging part because you get to look at all the stuff you're doing that you've spent decades of your life suppressing and hiding, denying and avoiding. And it's not a walk in the park sometimes, but it does heal. It does change your life. So it requires great courage. But if you have the courage, if you have the willingness to look at the worst and best parts of yourself, literally look at them, then it will transform your life.
That's beautiful. And I'm hearing words like freedom, expressions like, you know, freedom and weight lifted off your shoulders, you know, things that were such a burden. Any type of guilt or shame that you've had is automatically uplifted. And we don't even have to focus on that guilt and shame throughout your workshops, throughout the work with your participants. That's almost like a byproduct that happens during this transformation. And of course, now they have the tools that you equip them with to continue that transformation, it sounds like.
Yes, some really cool stuff happens. Like I did a session with this older lady, I think she was in her 70s. And in the beginning of the session, she looked, she looked about that age. At the end of the session, after the breakthrough that we had, our first call, she looked 20 years younger.
Wow.
And I have the video. You can see it. You can see the before and after of how this woman looked. Just from releasing all of that weight that you just talked about.
Yeah.
So I don't advertise, you know, this is a facelift program, but there's a lot of people that come out of it looking decades younger because of all of that emotional weight.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can clearly see that. And on a side
note, I'm actually 83 years old.
Oh, you're 83, huh? Yeah. Well, you know what? You age well. You must have zero stress, man. Oh, that's great. And you know what? When you were mentioning that, I was just thinking about and not touching on politics or any particular side, but just a president in general. You can take any two-term president and put a side-by-side picture from their inauguration to when they leave. And I have seen such a progression in those side by sides with, you know, with various two-term presidents. And I was just thinking about that as you were saying, you know, that's kind of like the progression of someone with having burden and weight put on them.
Yeah.
You know, versus how.
Yeah. Flip them. Exactly. You know, flip it. You know, you make the after the before and the before and the after.
100%. Yep.
That's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah. So, Andrew, how can the listeners learn more about the great work you're doing with Cinesomatics and pick up a copy of your book?
Sure. So Cinesomatics specifically That's the modality. That's at cinesomatics.org, cinesomatics.org, cinesomatics.org. Mm-hmm. And then you can learn about me and working together with me specifically in my books and all of that stuff at andrewdaniel.org. Just one word, andrewdaniel.org.
Beautiful. We'll put links to both sites on the episode show notes so the listeners can click those links and get more great information while they're listening to this wonderful conversation. Andrew, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. Thank you so much for just coming on, sharing with us, you know, what cinesomatics is and the great benefits that, you know, we can get from it.
Thanks, Aubrey. I appreciate all the questions too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again, Andrew. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And hey, look, if you have a loved one, colleague, coworker, neighbor, friend, who just doesn't seem to be themselves, maybe they're just drifting along in dark days of despair, not quite knowing where to turn or who to turn to, I humbly ask that you please share this show with them. Because on the road to rediscovery, we want our listeners to know two things. Number one, you're not alone. And two, there's always hope. The Road to Rediscovery, it's a movement, a revolution. And guess what? You are now part of it. We're all roadies on this journey of life. And it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.